Hi everybody, and welcome to the Backdrop Journal FFS podcast. My name's Pete Coombs, and I've presented all of the pods to date, but for this edition, or episode, I've decided to leave the pod in the capable hands of Andy Beale and Zach Emerson from the Backdrop crew, as I am taking my son off to watch a football game. Anyway, in this episode, Andy and Zach will be chatting with Matt Droog from Strander Snowboards. Yeah, Matt's inspiration behind the designs of his boards comes from longboard surfing, particularly some heroes and some old footage from the 60s, how he watched people ride and how he rode himself when he was out surfing in California, and from his time spent riding deep power in Japan and also in the resort of Strander, which is just inland from Ulesund on the west coast of Norway. It's relatively high up, actually, about two-thirds of the way up, way above Bergen, still in the fjords area, and it's an amazing place. I've ridden there, and unbeknownst to a lot of people, it gets the most snow of any resort in Europe. Can be a wee bit wet, because it's right near the fjord, and the weather of northern Norway can be pretty brutal, but if you get it on a good day, it has some real steep terrain and some amazing powder snow. I was there in mixed conditions, and after a good morning riding pow, it started to rain a bit, and the guide I was with, who worked for the resort, said, do you want to go to his, or invited me to, if I wanted to go to his mum's house for waffles. So I said, yeah, why not, you know? And he said, yeah, it's a great off-piste run. He said, I used to do it with my brother at the end of Saturdays. We'd ride down through the trees, right down almost to my mum's house, and she'd make us waffles and hot chocolate, and we'd be just in time to watch English Premier League football because of the time difference. So you'd get a full days of riding in, waffles, hot chocolate, and a game of footy to finish it off. So that was how he used to spend his Saturdays growing up. Anyway, we rode off down towards his mum's house and down towards one of the fjords, and he just vanished around this guy's house. He sort of scooted straight up to the guy's porch that went all the way around the house, sort of North American style-y, and wandered round and left me floundering in the back garden. And I presumed it was his house, but he just vanished, and then I saw his head sort of bobbing off down the road. He was walking off down the road towards another house, and I'm waist deep in this snow trying to get to this porch, and some middle-aged dude comes around the corner dressed in blue overalls with a load of timber on his shoulder. And I thought, oh, how am I going to explain this? I don't speak any Norwegian. I'm lying in the guy's back garden. What's going on? And he just looked at me and smiled and said, oh, hello, and carried on about his business, put the timber down in some barn. And I just presumed that he must be used to people riding into his back garden. And anyway, it cracked me up that they were so relaxed dudes, and that the place was so amazing. So I could see why Mats gets the inspiration to call his company Strander. Anyway, Mats, a very interesting dude. I hope you like the chat with Zach and Andy. Matt talks about punk rock, about board design, about the general scene in Sweden and in Norway, and how he uses sheepskin, or it might even be reindeer, leather gloves with wolverine fur and mink grease to waterproof them. So, you know, go figure. It's a natural step up from Gore-Tex that we all use, or lots of us use. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the pod, and I really hope you have a really safe and exciting 2022 season. And yeah, see you on the other side. Stay safe.
I have 2 minutes. And get a bit.
So yeah, you guys are in UK now, or where are you?
Yeah, we are. We're calling from London. So we're both in South London. Do you know London at all?
Yeah, of course.
Ah, okay. So, well,
I'm from Sweden, for fuck's sake. You know how many Swedes there are
yeah, there are a
strolling
few.
around in Covent Garden any given minute.
Yeah. You're
What?
calling from Stockholm, are you?
I'm on Ingarö. Hang on. No, it's an island outside Stockholm. Yeah.
On the
So it's
archipelago.
in the archipelago. Yeah.
Nice.
The never-ending archipelago. But I'm a far bit out, but it still continues.
It's amazing. I looked at it on Google Maps the other day, and it's just unbelievable how many islands there are.
Navigating here, nighttime, I can tell you're not going fast. You're very cautious.
What's your one called, Matt?
Ingarö.
Oh, how do you spell that?
Ingarö. Ingarö.
Yeah.
An O with the two dots. Yeah, so it's quite a big island. I'm living on the on the on the on the on, towards the Baltic.
Pretty defensible, right? Anyone wants to attack Stockholm by sea, you've got to get through all of that first.
Yeah, I mean the first thing that's going to happen when the Russians attack us is that they're gonna erase the bridges and we get caught out here, So
Okay.
you need to have a boat in standby,
Yeah.
if the Russians are coming, we're in a shitty position, I tell you.
Well, I don't know. I think it's practically Russia here, you know. They own so much property in London. I don't know if it's the
Yeah.
same in Stockholm.
We just
No,
sold it. We
they
sold
need
it.
to they don't need to invade you guys,
No.
because they already own you, but
I
here,
know.
it's they need to get here.
We're going to have to ask for permission to move around soon in London. Hi everyone, welcome to the Backdrop FFS podcast, coming to you today from London and Sweden. I'm Andy Beale from Backdrop. And for those of you who are new to this podcast, the FFS bit isn't always what you think it might be about. It's also a loose kind of theme we try and work into our podcast, standing for fear, failure, and success, because we're lucky enough to be talking to some pretty amazing people, and they often have some fantastic insights and tips that the rest of us can meditate on for our lives. Anyway, today we have Zach from the Backdrop crew. How are you, Zach?
Hey Andy, I'm good, thank you.
Good
Hey Matt.
man. And today we are stoked to be talking to Matt Drew. Did I get that right, Matt?
I mean, it's a Belgian name. We came here as immigrants 400 years ago, so I don't know fuck how to pronounce it. I say Drugge. You
Druga,
probably,
Druga.
I don't know how the Belgians want it pronounced, but I'm okay with anything.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Right, so Mats is the founder of Strandus Snowboards, the maker of some pretty kick-ass solids and splits.
Thank
How are
you.
you, Mats?
I'm good and good. It's I'm sitting inside. It's 7 degrees warm outside. It's raining, so it's a good place to be here now.
So it doesn't sound so wintry.
No, it was a week ago. It was 15 degrees cold. We had snow. I was up this weekend in Åre, which is our premier resort for a test weekend for regular riders. Lots of snow, really good. And now it's been raining for a week. Even up there, it's raining. But it's supposed to come back on Sunday. So winter is here to stay, I think.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's London here. We're you know, it's kind of it's warmer than it should be. It's gray. It's a bit damp.
Yeah, you guys invented the rain, I think.
It does feel like it at times. So Matt, you're running a snowboard company. How did you get into this? What's your background here, and how did you get into riding?
Basically, I came into snowboard shaping because I love to carve. I still love to carve. I think that's probably the closest thing to surfing is to ride on edge. You really feel like the grip, the G forces. And around 2000s, it's like 20 years ago, I started, you know, thinking how you get boards to ride better. So in 2002, I became good friends with Chris Pryor, rest in peace, a great guy. Mm-hmm. And I tried some of his really long carving boards for hard boots, like a 2 meter split tail race board. And it was just amazing how effortless that board turned, that long effective edge with a split tail. Mm-hmm. And I started talking, and it ended up with Chris making me the board of my dreams. And from then on, I got sort of hooked into this, and I started experimenting myself, making like primitive homemade stuff. And I learned a lot by just, you know, hanging out with good guys, seeing how they made stuff, and I got Chris to make another couple of boards for me, which I lent to two pals, and they loved the boards, and it sort of evolved into a brand called Alpine Punk, because I thought, you know, mainstream, that's riding a little twin tip in the park. That's not punk rock. Punk rock is riding, you know, proper longboards and really like scraping your elbow on your turns. So I had two models. I got to know everyone in the whole world, basically, who ride hard boots, which is not that many. Yeah. And
what year was that?
Yeah, this was 2002. So, I mean, This is when hard booting was out. I didn't do race boards, nothing. That was the thing. You had like very specialized slalom boards for tight courses. You had the GS boards, which was made for like, you know, you had to push like 300 kilos in leg press, you know, to use those boards, you know. So I wanted to make boards which was surfy, and it was also aligning with a crew of Southern California surfers I met in Colorado. They were riding hard boots. They were riding like this undulating terrain, like it was, you know, waves. They were riding in a whole different way of riding compared to the Euro style. Yeah.
Sorry, that Euro style. No worries. Is that using, was the term Alpine boards?
Alpine boards. And these guys were riding much more with rotation into turn. Like you are, you know, like you are, the positioning was a surf style snowboarding, and they called it surf style snowboarding. It was Joe Cabell, who's ex-world champion longboard surfer. He's now in his 80s. Mike Doyle, who really was like a big influence on me, was also world champion longboard surfers from the 60s, and some local guys there, and they even made videos and stuff, and they really like sort of, yeah, they influenced my riding style a lot. So that's where like the DNA of Stranda is very directional, very much into good edge hole carvability, and you know, doing link turns, you know, if it's powder or groomers. So I mean, the whole that's an important thing for me. It's like powder and groomers, and this was just a lot of fun, you know, a hobby for me. And like 10 years ago, so I just got bored with this, you know, it was same guys, and I just got into a dead end where I didn't find it so fun riding just, you know, groomers. And I just stopped it. And 2000, like almost at the same time, I lost my business. I was in publishing. I had previously also distributed F2 and Deluxe and stuff. So I've been into distributing of snowboards and stuff. Mm-hmm. But basically, as you all know, all the people got starting in mobile phones in 2008, you know.
Right.
And people quit reading magazines and reading, and, you know. So my whole, like, my whole existence just disappeared.
Right.
And so I was sitting for 2-3 years just mopping around, seeing my savings just like disappearing. And
yeah.
And my wife told me, because she's a very wise woman, she told me, "Mats, you're always happy when you're talking about snowboards and when you're riding snowboards. Shouldn't you try that?" And I told her, "Oh, you can't make money off snowboarding. It's just a clusterfuck, you know. It's just downhill since the 90s. But no, I mean, if you got nothing to lose, you can just, you know, try it. So I've always been more like an ID guy and a design guy. I design, I do the technical construction. Mm-hmm. I think I have a lot of fun riding. I have a lot of fun talking to people and communicating. So I'm not a typical like guy who stands in the garage are totally emerged in how this board won't delam. I found the idea. I can make a board which won't delam, and then spend like 3 weeks with just doing it all over again.
Mm.
I'm more into, you know, find ideas and make them work. So
yeah, and you hire the engineers to execute.
Yeah. I mean, and also, to be frank, to have a consistent high quality, you need to work every day. You know, you need to do your craft every day. It could look like a very easy work to just like, you know, oh, you just spread epoxy and put up the elimination together, but it ain't, you know, it ain't. It's a lot of just like things you learn from doing it every year, every day, year in, year out. And I think I have a bit deep respect for that part of manufacturing. I wouldn't call it art, but it's really a trade which requires a lot of, you know, doing over and over, repetitive, you know, learning. Anyway, so I always used ash in my course. So I mean, now I'm getting into the nerdiness here.
We love a bit of nerdness.
Yeah,
we do. We love it.
So anyway, I thought, what the hell? Maybe I could get this to work. So I ramped up 2 new shapes, which was 2 really stupid shapes: a 185 twin tip for like carving and riding big lines, and a 177, which I thought was more sensible carving shape. With a little moon tail called the cheater. And that's from where I relaunched sort of Stranda. But my idea was to get into more sort of what I was looking into than free riding. Where was I? Yeah, so the problem was small quantities, and I want to do like my own course where I use mostly ash, because ash has really good qualities. It's a dense wood. It's a wood which keeps its shape. It's a wood where when you are compressing out ash instead of like poplar, which is the most common wood core, which is more porous. When you're deflecting it kills micro vibrations. And when you decamber it, and you hit an icy patch, the board will, it's kind of a slow wood. It's like a daft. It's like, oh, what happened? And it's like, yeah, I'm going to wash out, but just a little bit. And then you get on, when the board has reacted, you're probably in a safe spot. So it's really like a good, calm type of wood. It's a bit more expensive. And that's like the essence of my whole idea. It's just like using good wood and have a core profile which is aligned with the shape of a board and the camber profile. And if you get those 3 things together, everything will be, you know, good.
How much ash do you have to have in the board to feel that difference that you're talking about?
I'm not a scientist, but I use around 65% in most of the solids. In the descender, which is At the moment, my best-selling board, I have two stringers. But I mean, there's other stuff which makes the board ride good, of course. Yeah. But you can feel that the descender is riding a bit differently, you know. Not in a bad way, it's just different.
And Matt, just going back to the kind of, we can get into the nitty-gritty of boards and the details again, because I know we've got a few other questions for you. But just going back to like the birth of the brand and stuff and the core of it, like, so, okay, I'm in London and my geography is not great, but Stranda is in Norway.
Yeah, I love Stranda. Yeah. It's a fantastic free ride place. Absolutely. It's one of my five places. You should go there. You know, everyone should go there at least once in their lifetime, I think.
Absolutely love to. We need to get a little list from you actually of places to check out. I think there's a well, we did the Backdrop Boys, we did an amazing expedition up to the Photon Islands, or however you would say it, a couple of seasons back, and that just blew our minds. It was really cool, really cool. So I think everyone's up for a bit of a tour, you know. And I know a couple of the lads go to Lingenalp each season, and they're going to go again this year if they're allowed to travel.
Of course, of course. But you should venture into the Swedish side as well. You know, around Riksgränsen and the Tarfala Lodge, and there are so many peaks and a little less traffic in the backcountry there, I think. Lovely. Compared to where Lingen is now, because it's almost crowded sometimes now.
And what and how did you pick on Stranda? Are you from there, or what's the connection?
No,
exactly,
I'm from Gothenburg. I'm from Gothenburg on the west coast, but I just love it. And it also means riding all the way up to the beach, you know, like you're running your ship or your board surfboard straight up to on the beach. So it's also a bit of surf thing in there. I just like it. And it's a short name and everyone can say it. And it works on all languages. It's just good. And it's a good place. So, you know, why not advertise it?
It sounds good. I mean, it just sounds cool. And also, we were, there's a few of us are keen surfers. We're not amazing, but we love surfing. And we surf like around the UK, and figured that you might be sort of part Viking and have that surfing connection.
Yeah. There's some really good surf spots in Norway, with the Atlantic coming in. Even in the summer, you know, you have nice, slow, longboard beach breaks there.
Yeah,
we were lucky enough to have a surf up at Unstad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we that was were amazing.
The Falkland Islands. Yeah.
It was all like, not exactly icebergs, but it was all, everything was white. So that was new for us anyway. It was cool.
You had some thick wall covering wetsuits on, then I assume.
We did. It was pretty toasty, actually. Maybe 6-5.
But the thing is also that, if the water doesn't really, really get cold because of the Gulf Stream, you know, the ice doesn't really.
4 degrees, so, something like that up there.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's like seven off the UK
into
the
autumn, you can have pretty okay water temperatures there, but cold in the air temperatures are cold.
Yeah, exactly. It was warmer to be in the sea than it was to be on the land that day.
Still the best shower I can ever remember from that trip, Andy. Do you remember that shower? There was a little like surf shack that sold lent out decks, and then there was like an outdoor shower, and then you're just like looking at the landscape and everything, and it was amazing. Well, it felt warm. It was probably freezing water, but it felt quite hot.
Yeah, probably 12 degrees water. You would be screaming like a little girl with that shower temperature normally.
The thing is, it was quite windy, so we had to stand about 4 meters downwind of where the shower head was.
Wow. Yeah. You take the wind drift into the calculation.
Yeah. And so your background in, you said you were in publishing.
Yeah.
And that was, what part of publishing were you?
I started with, I'm like all guys my age. I played in punk rock bands, one of the earliest Swedish punk rock bands. So I'm a guitarist. And when that panned out, I started sort of an underground sort of ID-ish, little bit of fashion, strange lifestyles, squatting, and, you know, all that stuff which were happening in the 80s. And that sort of got into more mainstream publishing as you get older and more responsibilities and you have to pay your rent, and you don't really like to get your electricity turned off every now and then. When I quit, I had a sort of men's lifestyle, like Loaded style mag, which was doing fairly well until the internet came and fucked everything up, which I'm very happy for now. You know, that was one of the best things that happened to me, because I was, you know, when you are getting into business, you never know. It's like getting into crime. You know, you never know where you're going to end. You know, am I going to be a bank robber next week? You know, you get into places where you don't really want to be.
Yes.
And getting that opportunity, like I'm saying this late in life, it's a great thing, you know, because you can say, no, I don't want to be having employees and having responsibilities. I want to keep it small and effective and doing fun. And I want to hang out with fun people. I don't want to work with people who aren't fun to work with, you know. And that's like, I mean, the whole this was one of my greatest life experiences, I would say.
Amazing. In terms of the, it's a very saturated market, isn't it? Split boarding is growing, and you know, if we're brutally honest, like all snowboards work these days pretty well. And depending on what you're doing, I mean, there's so many good ones. There's so much cool tech, and it's lovely when the tech kind of goes back to things like ash. Just the kinds of particular wood and and it's amazing.
I wouldn't call that tech. I would call that non-tech.
Non-tech, yeah. But there's,
I understand what you mean. Sorry, I understand what you mean. Yeah.
But there's a nice sort of I ride an Amplid, which is all carbon, which is like that, like a tech deck. But carbon is also so simple, isn't it? In some ways, but it's I guess it's like it's very personal to every rider, like what they ride, and so it becomes kind of, I guess, about what, you know, what a brand means to you and what kind of riding you want to get into, and the vibe of the whole thing. So I guess that's why we're kind of asking about your mindset and stuff, because that's really important, I think, for listeners and people who want to try decks out. And I've never tried a longboard myself. Not deliberately, anyway.
No, I mean, I do 148. So, I mean, I do. The range today, and I would say the pivotal shape was the shorty, which I did year two, which was a lot of experience of struggling on the mountain. You know, not struggling in those fucking powder bowls where everything is hunky-dory, but the last 600 vertical meters where it's just bumps and cookies and people, and you know, you're getting down into to get the gondola up and it's just terrible. Or you're going in a little frozen gully of like a, you know, and it's and it's just like so the shorty is a shape where the first was 169. People were laughing. Oh, it's called the shorty. It's 169. Well, I was referring to the short tail. So it's got a short tail, a camber, enough camber to so you can feel the camber, and a long swoopy. I would say one of the most radical nose rockers on the market. Starts just in front of the inserts, front inserts. And this board, I can ride the 169 in trees in Japan, and it's just effortlessly just goes around. But when you're putting on edge, you are positioned on the side cut exactly where you want to be, the sweet spot for carving it. So it's easy to carve, and it rides like a much shorter board. So this board is going against the whole this thing size down. This board is a size up board. It's made, it's not wide, it's longer. So you get the area to glide, and it's narrow. So when you're riding in typical European terrain where you can have like a 1500 meter vertical run, and the top is like windblown ice. You want some good edge hold. And then you're getting the powder and you have a powder board, but then you have the last part, which is going to drain you of energy. Mm-hmm. It's getting, you know, through the shitty stuff so you can get in to the gondola and go up again if you are riding or if you're not splitting. And splitting is, I mean, it's obviously the same thing. You're going to go down to maybe a field of low aspect crust where you have to do a gazillion jump turns not to go down. Well, with this shape, you can actually just ride it through and even put it a bit on edge, and it will turn in a nice turn without going U-boat. And that's what happens with the North American wide short boards. When you are putting those boards on edge in heavier snow, it will sort of slide down. And I mean, from my riding experience in Colorado, for instance, is that you very seldom experience this kind of riding conditions. So I totally understand. It's like shaping for Japan. If you're living in Hokkaido, you know, you never have to figure like, is this nose maybe a bit too stiff when I'm putting it on edge on harder snow? You don't have to think like that because you're always riding in like this fluffy, dreamlike stuff. So you can make your noses super stiff. So I've taken like all this stuff into consideration so I can ride much better than I'm actually is. And that board has been, was starting like why I'm now actually running a business and I can make a living out of this is because I made a board which was just offering something which I couldn't find anywhere else, you know, honestly.
It's very hard.
So the 164 shorty is the go-to length for any normal built guy. The 159 is not a board for a guy who ride 159s. It's a board for guys who ride a 155-ish, you know, lightweight 70-kilo guy or something with smaller feet. So the shorty and the tree surfer one, my fish, for instance, they are made to be ridden longer, not shorter.
So do you have a size converter on your site?
No, I don't. I don't. I think I'm stating this in the videos, or I'm stating this in the videos, okay. So I don't really have that, but I trust people read.
I've gone from like I don't know about you, Andy. When I was a grommet, we were in the resorts a lot more. I was riding a shorter, I guess for jumps and turns and things, like a shorter, like a one. I'm only 5'8", but it was like a 152, 53, 54.
Yeah.
And it's been getting longer, and now I'm on a 159. But I'm wondering sort of what that would translate into. I mean, you just said it a few minutes earlier, but if I was looking to try out.
What's 5'8" in centimeters?
Yeah.
What's 5'8" in centimeters?
172.
Yeah. So you would be on the 159. But I mean, on the other hand, the 169, which is my go-to length because I like riding longer boards, I have Japanese guys who's riding the 169 and they're killing it and they are small guys. So, I mean, it's also about your riding style, you know. I think all this like, you know, you could be, if you're surfing, I mean, you could translate this into surfing. What kind of wave are you riding, you know? If you're on small summer waves, you're going to bring out your log, you know, your 11 or your 12.6 or something. It's just stupid bringing your shortboard because you want to look like, a top surfer guy because you're not going to catch any waves. So, I mean, it's the same in comparison to your, if you're not a freestyle guy and you're a directional guy, you would probably be much better off with a little longer board where you can turn, carve to scrape off speed or, you know, go fast and feeling secure, even if you're into lumps of snow. I mean, I've had terrible experiences. I did a big splitboard test for Outside magazine. It was around in Sweden for a while. And I was trying a lot of those short North American shaped fish boards. And if you are traversing over where you can't see your feet because there's so much side drift of snow and you have these cauliflower formations and behind your rear foot, you have this much board left, you know, you will just cartwheel, and that's just to get to the couloir, which you're going to ride. But to get to that couloir, you have 3 hours of crisscrossing on your split board, and then maybe ride into it on the top of the Norwegian mountain where you don't see anything. And then you're going to enjoy 15 minutes of fantastic riding, but then you have 40 more minutes to ride this out. So you know where I'm coming from.
Yeah. So you've built some reality into your boards as well. You can't always ride on the absolute perfect conditions, right? So
no.
The boards are made to handle kind of like a quiver in one board. Each of them with their own slightly different style, but they can handle everything. That sounds cool.
There are very few, seems to me, genuine kind of all mountain and skis as well. Like there's very few models that everyone really agrees can really handle like a bunch of different conditions as you go down the mountain.
Yeah.
And yet every time you go down the mountain, there are always different conditions.
Yeah. I mean, you always have to sacrifice something. I mean, this is so fun. Now, after 5 years, one of my best sellers is now the Cheater, the carver I was referring to, which is 12 millimeter of camber. Shortest one is 170, and I have a wide 275 waist wide. And those two are, you know, selling really, really well now for me. I have boards which are more specialized. I would say the Descender, which is the most twin tippy looking, very directional, all mountain split solid I have. That's probably the most sort of Swiss knife board I have. And that's also the board people in general feel like very much at home. Still has the Stranda DNA, but it's not like the Shorty or the Tree Surfer or the Bowl Rider, the my more sort of rockered but with camber surfy shapes. I would call them like surf shapes or something similar. Those boards with big rockers, still camber.
Yeah, it seems like quite a strong USP for your brand that you've got this focus on carving, but also the powder and the big mountain stuff. I think that's it's not something, you know, I've come across in other brands of that sort of focus before.
No, I mean it's a small segment. That's why they don't focus there. I think it's powder and groomers aren't really like, you know, you have Kurua, which done great stuff for carving.
Yeah.
I admire them, you know, both for brand building and also getting the kids into carving. I think like fantastic. But there is not much being done by the other brands there, you know, in the carving thing. You know, they 2 years ago, you could see like signs that they want to get into this. Jones did some trying to get into their Nitro did something, but they're not really like, because, you know, they think it's not, you know, it's not where their bread and butter is. So yeah, there's not much focus.
No, but and you've got splits of, you know, the Descender and the Shorty and the Tree Surfer.
Yeah.
How much does the splitting of a board detract from the carving side of things these days with your boards?
I mean, for me, split board is probably my main focus at the moment, because I love the environment, the guys who are in there. I work with some pretty strong independent shops, which are super supportive, and I enjoy kicking things, you know, to and through with them. And it's probably half of my turnover now is from split boards.
Okay.
And it's growing. I mean, it's fantastic to see the development now. I know you had Hampus on a couple of weeks ago, and his thing with the disruptive and with the floorboard technology and I mean it's an exciting time to be there, you know. It's so much stuff happening. in a short period of time. It's and people are coming in there. I would say at least a big portion of the guys who now are coming into splitboard are skiers who snowboarded in the 90s and they've been touring skis, and now they see how much more fun we guys have when we are on snowboards. True. And they see how much we equipment have evolved, you know. So it's another type of customers, another type of rider. It's another mindset. They aren't like looking for 490 euros set prices with crappy bindings. They are looking for good stuff, you know, high quality good stuff, which could you know, give them a great experience.
Yeah.
And Mats, what do you think, right? Because so I had a Burton Dominator, I think, for a few years, solid board, and really loved it. It was actually, I think, designed as a park board, but I just used it as an all mountain board and loved it. Yeah. And then I got an Amplid Split, which I love, the first one, and kind of used it up. It's like a second board, really. And then got another one, and then basically, I just ride my Split all the time. That's it. I feel good on it. I feel solid. And we you know, I guess Andy's question was sort of, do you feel yourself with your decks and in general in riding that there's a loss of precision with a Split? Because I don't really feel, I don't feel it myself much.
It's always going to be a bit heavier. That's one thing. But then I think it's also about the type of clips you're using and also the bindings. Like, I think that some bindings are offering a more stable connection where you also have your pressure, you know, at the inserts. The Vuillet Puck system isn't the best system for providing a solid
torsional.
I think there are better things for that. I mean, I think Karakoram is probably locking it together. The floorboard technology, then you can use, you know, below for something. I use Plum. I'm also the sales rep for Plum in Scandinavia. So, I mean, I have a vested interest here. But I, before that, I used for bindings for 3 seasons, you know, their rental system, which is very burly and adjustable and fast to set up. And with the Plum bindings, I've sold several setups to guys who just want one board, you know.
Yeah
go for resort riding.
And I
have no problem euro carving my shortest split with Plum bindings. Yeah. No problems.
Yeah.
And I also think you have to take in consideration, I'm not an engineer, but what you actually don't want to twist is the edge you're running in the snow. You don't want to twist that, you know. And now you're pushing on the hillside. You're pushing the lower part here on one ski. That ski is narrower, which you don't get the same torsional twisting as you get on a. The narrower you get a board or a ski, the less torsional problems will you have. So, I think I've been thinking about this, and this is my own theory, and probably an engineer can say, you're totally wrong, but I think I'm right. There is less torsional problems with one narrow ski when you're pushing the lower part. Like, here is the snow, and here is the lower ski and your binding. Sure. I think that's why it works. So it doesn't matter what happens upside. Doesn't affect what's happening on the edge. You have to cut this. I think I was very talking too much.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm in the same position as Zach, and maybe this is partly driven by living somewhere where you have to, you know, you have to travel quite a long way to get to the slope. Yeah. I travel with one board, and I've been riding a Jones Solution for the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
And that thing is super playful. It's good in the high mountains. You know, it's my one board. Use it for everything, just on play days on the piste as well. One thing that, and this is probably my technique, so it's definitely not dissing the Jones solution, but I find it hard to hold a real, you know, solid heel side carve.
Yeah.
So, look forward to trying some. Well, I think I probably need to work on the technique as much as anything.
I mean, heel sides, are you riding a very ducked stance, or are you riding possibly?
Yeah, exactly. About 25 forward, 15 back, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we just would turn your back foot to like six, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
then you will get your body, what do you say? Your body can't work, you know, you're locking yourself up in your pelvis. So you can't really twist the way you need to. When you're surfing or skating, you can just adjust your foot at will, but you can't that. And having a two sort of duck stance thing, you're getting into that sit on the toilet thing on your heel side turns.
Yeah, right.
Your heel side carves. I mean, I'm an old geezer. I ride 12, 27 positive, you know, the old style classic. and that works for me, you know.
Yeah. And that's what you're riding up in the high mountains as well.
I ride everything. I ride that. I mean, if I would just ride a sort, I would maybe even go up to 15 on my or you know 15 or something on my back foot positive. So it's easier to. And I mean, if you're checking out the Japanese kids now who are carving, they are riding like I would say 40. 25 in soft boots, you know, and tight stances. And I see the kids also carving here in Europe are also, you know, tighter stances. They are riding like it's like looking at Craig Kelly in 1990 or 1988 or something. You know, it's almost tuckney, as we call it. You know, I love to see the old powder. Sequences with Craig Kelly because his positive angles and he's so smooth, he's so playful. It's not like a lot of the free riders today are like raping the hill. They are spraying and forcing and like gah, and that riding style that Craig had with a setup, his total setup is maybe not the best to land crazy like you know spins and nose butters and stuff because no one did that but when you look at him riding he's like a Jedi and I think a part of that is because he's riding with a tighter stance and a positive angles mm-hmm. and I mean I've seen Nicholas Volcano riding now very old school you know tighter stance and free riding and I think that looks you know good it looks good mm-hmm. and I think that's an important thing you know you like the you know it should look good and easy
so you've actually said a few interesting things already you know specifically to do with this Mats but so fear failure success the idea is to ask interesting folk like yourself about these three words and what they trigger in terms of feelings and memories of your lives and it could be a personal thing or a business thing and so starting with fear, could you tell us something which has or does strike fear into you?
Well, that's memories of stupid stuff, you know, which you know was very close calls.
Yeah.
That's terrible, you know. That's terrible. Yeah. You know, I have a memory of me and my wife. I have a little KTM7. And we were driving in Stelvio, and I was overtaking a motorbike downhill and it was a big bump in the road so my steering wheel was just yanked out of my hands and we was almost going over like a 3 meter down to the around the next serpentine road we didn't do it and I but the feeling was you know the my just you know it's just so fear inducing you know the thought of hurting my wife and just like you know I don't know it was just so stupid it was like an adrenaline thing going and that's something that's fear for me you know that's really Fear. Yeah. Terrible.
So if you were going to connect that to a mountain scenario, is it kind of like trying to, could you say, trying to kind of have a pre-mortem or a consciousness about what, even if you're pushing the envelope, what you're doing in the moment to try and make sure that you get down safely to have a beer?
I mean, that's what's just top of mind. I mean, I have, you know, you have memories of, you can hear the snow is cracking and you're just trying to, like, slowly moving out of where you are. You know, you're stupid and you know, it's so close, and nothing happens, but that's something that scares me the most. I think the sort of realization that this was, you know, most of the time you don't know that the Grim Reaper are just behind you. You know, you're not aware of this, you know, he could be here now. I don't know. But I mean, then it's so obvious that I myself have put me in a position that possibly could have been fatal for me.
So Andy and I have a specific memory in mind. I think you're thinking of the same thing, Andy, that I won't bore you with now. But we can see on your site that you're running education courses and backcountry courses and stuff like that.
Yeah. The thing is, we sell a lot of complete sets, you know, with split boards and bindings and skins and poles and everything. And pretty early, I realized that half of the guys didn't know what they were getting into. And I want to be more like offering something more than just selling gear to people. So we started offering last year split board crash courses, split board clinics, which basically is of course a short, compact safety introduction, how you dig, how you use your transceiver, how you use your probe, especially how you dig, you know, because I mean, with the new transceivers, it's not that, you know, complicated. It's just the most important part, I think, is knowing how do you dig through 2 meters of compressed snow. So, but that's a short thing. The big thing is teaching people how to use their equipment so they don't destroy their new pristine board, you know, by forcing stuff or you know, so it's I work with a French Canadian instructor who lives here in Sweden. So first day is just resort riding, i.e. we take the lift up and then we go to the gnarliest places you can find, you know, with trees and drops and stuff where most people haven't, you know, experienced before, take them a bit out of the comfort zone and show them how to ride steeps and how to control the board. Second day is split boarding, and we do many changeovers, a lot of changeovers, so people know the drill, you know, how you take turns in breaking a track, what you should listen to the guide. So it's a preparation to go with a guide. It's a 2-day course to then go to France or, you know, to where you guys go in Northern Norway, and you can be out with a guide for a week and you know the drill, and other people don't have to wait for you because you know how to put your skins on, how to take the board apart, how to put it together. So create better riders, you know, and hopefully this is a thing that can grow, because I see the biggest hindrance of snowboarding getting bigger is that the low level of riding of most snowboarders. They've never learned really to ride. You see this what like this wind wiping style of riding. You see a lot of skiers riding their carving skis like that, but I don't care about those guys. But I mean, snowboarding needs to, you know, I would love to see snowboarding growing, and this is a way of getting more people out riding better and enjoying their free riding much more. So this year we're doing 2-3 split board clinics and here in Sweden, and we do a 1 week introduction, and then it's a 4 day free ride level two thing combined, and then we do COVID, let's see what happens. We're doing a 6 day hut trip to the Tarfala Lodge, which is in the Kebnekaise area, Sweden's highest. And that's as I said, it's just about, I want to, there is no offerings for snowboarders, you know, there's very few of those, which is organized, and you can identify them. There's, you can go on a free ride week for with a guide, but that's also including skiers, and they have very often another mindset. They want different lines, and I know a lot of people who experienced have bad times with angry skiing guides who are just like stressing out, and I think it's like you know, I just want to grow a community make things you know, may sound sort of preaching here, but you know, I want to make snowboarding nicer.
Yeah, it sounds great.
We're all about preaching for it here.
yeah. No, we're converted.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the next beat is about failure. So obviously, a lot of the images and films and stories and stuff that we see on the internet and around the place and magazines and books, everything, is all about shiny blue sky, bluebird days with perfect, you know, perfect jumps, and everything's gone right, and businesses that go right, everything's perfect. So, but what's more interesting is talking about failures and how those are turned into successes later. So, I mean, you already mentioned about your past, you know, business in publishing, and when that slightly fell.
Yeah.
Apart, and then
thank
you
very much,
yourself,
but... Steve Jobs, for inventing the iPhone.
what more could you share with us about that, about failure and what you connect with that word?
I mean, failure, it sounds like a cliche, but that's what failure is, actually something you grow from. You know, I've had really bad experiences, which was hard to accommodate for quite some years. But then now when I get in a similar situation, I'm much more sure about how to handle it, or maybe just seeing, I'm possibly getting into the same situation. Maybe I should just skip this. Like I told you, I don't want to work with people I don't like, you know. I don't want to interact with people who are you know, nasty. You know, you want to be, it doesn't matter how much money they have or what sort of who they are, you know. It's just, you know, you got to keep your what do you call it? In Sweden, we call it sinnesro, your peace of mind, you know.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I think that's what snowboarding is for me. That's peace of mind. When I ride, I get out of myself, you know. I think riding on edge, if it's powder or groomers, when you are balancing on just this tiny edge of metal, you are as godlike as you could be, you know, because you are in close contact with a higher power, because you're trusting this little thin edge in high speed that it's gonna hold you. And then you can just step out of it and go into the next turn and just feel the G's like pulling down your intestines in your scrotum or something, you know. And that's so rewarding and relaxing, because if you are not, it's like any kind of that, like driving fast in a car, biking, snowboarding, skateboarding, surfing, if you're not committing, i.e. losing your mind and getting into this other state, you are not going to make it. You know, if you start hesitating, if you want, it's like when you're going steeper, the more steeper you're riding, the more forward you need to attack. If you're getting into a backseat, you're just going to lose control. So, I mean, you think you're getting control when you're moving away from the danger, but you're actually you're actually getting in control when you're moving forward to the danger, which is the steepness. And this is really, you know, Timothy O'Leary said something about the surface being the next step of the evolution of the humankind. And I could put snowboarding in there as well, you know. Yeah. If you're not window washing riding, then you are not in that state. You are still thinking about other stuff.
That makes a lot of sense to me and and our gang for sure. I mean, you made me think of a pre-COVID moment. Actually, I was skiing with my kids, and
Did you have COVID?
I had COVID. Yeah, back in June.
Terrible.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
All good. It was fine. But this is pre-COVID in general coming along. Yeah. And we were doing a bit of slack country, me and my kids, and it'd been about, I don't know, nearly a foot of fresh. And we were doing a nice valley. And my youngest, who I think was six then, he just stopped and all the others went off. And he looks at me and he looks back up the hill. And he said, he just goes, "I get this, Dad." He goes, "You just make a line and then you go. That's the skiing, isn't it?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's basically it. That's literally it." And it was so simple, and he was so charmed by that. And I was like, "That is, you know, and it's a different way of saying exactly what you just said. It's the you're choosing a route, you're making your line, and that's your choice, and the way you describe it is up to you, depending on the terrain and your character and the deck."
Yeah, I mean, you're signing the hill.
You're signing the hill,
I love sitting in the lift and seeing, you know, a nice pencil line like this, and that's me. I signed it, you know.
So that's a nice thing. All right, and then the last one is success. So there's obviously business success and all that, but yeah, I mean, you know, I'm feeling your success, but tell us what that word would mean to you.
I mean, success is being satisfied, I think, you know, and then also having the drive to accomplish more, you know. And I'm not talking about, you know, business things. I'm just talking about having the happiness is being happy, but also feeling that, like, sort of urge to find new stuff to do, which you find is interesting. I think that's happiness, you know, and being like conscious about other people around you, you know, when you're younger, which I'm not, you are so focused on your own thing, and that's not successful. I think successful is also being able to let go of your own success and helping other people with their success. I mean, your family and your friends and even like competitors, you know. I very much enjoy, which I think is successful for the snowboard industry or this part of snowboard industry of micro brands, is we actually help each other out. You know, we can, you know, take some bags in our cars or, you know, we can tip off each other of a shop which could be of interest, and so on. So I think and I lost myself, but I think that's success for me, is being able to have like a wider sort of vision and still feeling okay and not feeling hunted to do stuff, but you still have a drive to do stuff. I don't know. I mean, being, you know, just being, you know, sounding like fucking Ram Dass, you know, the hippie guru. I have his book in my camper van. I occasionally flick through it. It's terrible for an old punk rocker, but you know, you're getting more hippish the older you get.
Yeah. I love it. I'm on board. Oh, we do have one more thing to ask.
Yeah.
What do you put in your rucksack?
My rucksack?
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, my last splitboard trip, I didn't bring a rucksack. I couldn't find it. I was terrible. I was a noob. My body's up in order. It was the day before the split test. I was just thinking, I'm going to go on a little side hill hike, you know, where you can actually go over cross-country skis and just get some snow in my feet. And we met up and they were more like, yeah, we're going up there. And when I saw where we were supposed to drop in, I said, guys, I don't even have a transceiver on me, let alone any safety equipment. So the old guy will walk back. But it was so fun because it was white out. It had frozen in a creek. So it was ice under, a lot of wind blown. So when I was halfway back to go down where we have gone up, I saw the other guys coming after me. So it was like, you know, a sign of, I don't know what. But yeah. In my backpack, I always have a safety kit. I have a blanket, one of those reflective blankets. Mm. I always have a down jacket to put on outside when I'm changing. I have a dry underwear. I have some thick wire, you know, thicker wire.
Yeah.
To repair things, some duct tape. I have a pair of sun things, and I have what do I have more?
Spare gloves.
I for skinning, I use one of those sort of uninsulated cheap ones you can buy in supermarkets, you know. Because I lose stuff. And then I have a pair of mittens. I just found a Swede. It's an old guy in Sweden, which I've been using now when I was up there. He's hand sewing them at home. And it's a wool liner inside. And they are like 30 euros. 30
Amazing.
Euros. They sell them at build markets up in the northern parts of Sweden.
Right.
Amazing gloves, and they so you can just, you know, put new liners in, and you can have thin mittens inside and thin gloves inside this big mittens. Fantastic ones. Yeah. So and I also have nuts, water, of course. You want me to do this more coherent, you know, so you can cut this in what I have in my backpack.
No, that's cool. It's nice just to get a sense of. I enjoyed that. Did you, Andy?
Yeah, I did. I did. I mean, I think you know. Hopefully, the handmade woolen industry of northern Sweden gets a little bump from this.
Yeah. Are you going? You're just going to send the sound. You're not going to send the video things here.
No video. No,
just the sound. Yeah.
I'm going to show them to you because they are so old school.
Oh, they're leather as well.
It's like the ones Shackleton or something had on
there. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have this.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot of the sheep involved in that one.
Yeah. And it's got a little Järvhandsken.
And what about waterproofness?
Wolverine. Wolverine. Järv is a wolverine. Yep. So it's the wolverine glove.
Okay. And what about waterproofness?
Yeah, you have to put grease on it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like whale grease or something.
Yeah, like you're swimming the channel.
Mink.
And,
mink grease. I think I use mink grease most of the time.
That's amazing.
Okay. Yeah, mink grease is really good. It's really water repellent.
Okay. Yeah, we might have
this to is good knowledge, you see. We don't have this knowledge in London.
No. It's definitely
I think
not
you have
mink
some
grease.
Mink fur there still.
We use chip fat on our gloves, you know?
Chick fat, yeah, of course.
Chip fat, fish and chip fat.
yeah, of course, yeah.
Andy, I'm out of questions. Have you got any more questions?
No, mate, that's good. I mean, I think we can wrap up, Matt. That's been really fascinating and really entertaining. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey, thank you so much, guys. Yeah. Thank you, Zach, Andre. It was a pleasure being here.
Yeah.
Well, I hope we get to meet you in person.
Yeah, you should come up to Riksgränsen this spring. You know, if the conditions are right, because I mean, 2 years ago when it was COVID, we had 6 meters of snow coverage there. I mean, it was amazing. I rode cold snow powder 20th of May.
Wow!
In the midnight sun, it's amazing. It's so good. I mean, maybe you have like more radical terrain or something. up in Lofoten, but there's a lot less traffic, and it's you know, it's a good place to be.
A bit more inland, so less maritime.
Yeah, a little more inland. I mean, still you can be. You know, I've been in my camper van for 3 days, just listening to the rain. You know, pouring down, and you're out of books to read, and you're just thinking, what the hell I'm doing here? And then the next day, it just turns around, bluebird, and a cold storm comes in, and you have the good stuff again. And that's the same as up in Lofoten. It could be exactly the same.
Yeah.
That's the thing with being close to the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Right. Matt, thanks very much. Fantastic talking to you. If people want to find out more about Strander and more about you, can they? Are there some kind of internet places they can go
to?
There are
a site called strandasnowboards.com.
Okay.
You can go there.
Cool.
Or same on Instagram, strandasnowboards. Easy to find.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Sign up for our newsletter. Most important.
Oh, yes. And
go do that.
Yeah.
Matt, it's really, really nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, likewise. A great podcast you're doing. Talk soon.
Thanks very much.
Good night. Bye.
Bye.